people against one another, or that it is in some way dissipating revenue in fruitless contests. I perhaps that is so, but I really don't think that once the courts have decided a matter one way or the other, that this commission can go into it. And I think, Mr. Wright, that I should say that I don't think the kind of label you applied to Mr. Julius Brecht is appropriate terminology to use here. I know there are strong feelings about these matters, but I hope in future we can proceed without recriminations.
I feel that, you know, when any of the panel members here bring out personal experiences, it's important to give insight as to how the Claims Act came about and how we're working with it, because what best, you know, those are the way I feel would be taken in that vein, because I think each one of us can best relay what's happened to us as individuals, and I don't believe any one of us here are out to, you know, put anyone down. And sometimes we, as natives, we're always honest and forthright, and so when we decide we're going to call a person a rat, we do it right to his face, you know. But what I would like to say is that in our real situation where we're today, looking back at the land claim settlement, out in the villages, the people very definitely feel the land belongs to them. And 1991 is just upon us, and in keeping the corporate system going for profit motivation, it kind of takes away from how you're currently managing your land. And with outside encroachment coming in, it's very real. We're getting more people out into the bush area, and we've got frontier oil development coming on. We have Norton Sound this year. We'll have the oil companies off the coast. And we know that it's not going to go away. We're just having more people pressure. And from our area, the way we regard the land is that all of it belongs to us, is there for us to use. But now we're, you know, coming to the point as to, are we going to start considering trespass? I mean, that's not within our traditional way. We've always had respect for the land, and now, which is really important, is that the land belongs to you, therefore you manage the resources on your land. But we're finding out that, you know, this is not so. We have fish and game enforcement officers being stationed year-round, and we don't have any cash economy in our area other than the state agencies, which are either there for airport maintenance or for providing schools. Very little real employment. So I see within a few years, if we don't address the management of resources on your own land, the land that's patented over to you, that is going to be very difficult for a native to keep his body intact with his soul. Because in the Nome area, I know that they're into subsistence permits. And if we bring that down to our smaller villages where we have to have a permit before we put fish on our table or get, well, we can understand for the caribou and for the moose, those are normal, but then fish is our basic sustenance. Now, I feel that's very important. It needs to be very directly addressed for indigenous people. Now, for cosmopolitan urbane, we'd be moving all over the place and not having to worry about what resources are on the land, but we still want management. But we are still indigenous people. We are tied to that land. We cannot be restricted in our activity pursuing on our land. And that's a fear that I've heard raised quite a bit, because we're getting the pressure of enforcement. And so when you violate the law, you get fined. So you have to pay cash to the state. And so that detracts from the food on your table for your children. Then, besides, it ruins your reputation too, because now you are, you know, a criminal. And as far as the IRA concept, I feel it's a very workable, viable concept. It has worked for those IRAs that have the energy and the drive, and they assert themselves that it has worked. It has worked since the early 1940s. But it depends on what you as landowners want and how much are you willing to put forth. But it's a very workable, and I think it's probably a lot more in step with the native traditional way of doing things, other better than the corporate structure. Because from what I remember, from what our elders have told us for years, that we have managed our own affairs all the way through. That's why we've survived, and we are going to continue to survive. We know what we want. It's just that, you know, the law, and we are very law-abiding people, and we'll continue to be very law-abiding people, because that's the reason why I feel that the AFN chose a legislative route, and that the leaders in our state really should look in terms of, you know, that the private landowners in the state of Alaska are residents. They do enhance the economy of the state, and that, you know, when it comes down to really the subsistence issues, that, you know, it should be considered regionally, and that, you know, human dignity must at all times be preserved.
Could I ask a question? You were secretary of the Alaska Federation of Natives in 1971. Did you wish to add anything, Mr. Hope?
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple things. When we join something, and when we become a part of something, we must obey the rules. And that was what the AFN was doing. The AFN decided in the Fairbanks meeting, before the Fairbanks meeting, that they would use Robert's rules as their guide. Mr. Wright did not recess the convention. He adjourned the convention. There is quite a difference between a recessing the convention and adjourning. A presiding officer cannot adjourn a convention. A presiding officer can convene a convention, and he can declare a quorum, but only the convention can adjourn itself, and that's what that thing was all about. With respect to Venati, the record that I had showed somewhat different than the Venati people understood it. And we were trying to go by the record. Because they were very uncomfortable with the their situation and how we viewed it, and at that time I was with the Bureau. I decided I had to go to Vienna Town. Mr. Wright was there at the time. And we chartered, and we had the Arctic Village people. I had enough money in my budget to have them come down and testify. They were of one accord. They understood it as Mr. Wright understood it, and all the testimony supported that position. And therefore, when I got back, we changed our posture, and we went along. I never felt so uncomfortable, because normally in a given situation where I'm involved, I don't get castigated or cast in the role of the bad guy. And this time I felt really that I was a bad guy. And I was thankful that I had the opportunity to go there and listen to the elders as they understood what they were voting for when they created their reservation and their governing body. Their testimony was what prevailed, even though the record that we had did not support it. However, their testimony finally was the ultimate guide. To get back to the other thing, where we're talking about the IRA, and I was thinking that tomorrow and the next day we'd get to that part. I think that I share with Mr. Paul the vehicle is a good vehicle, but I don't believe it would be acceptable in Southeast. The experience there had been very negative. The cannery operation, we now know that it's very difficult to make a profit operating a cannery under the best of circumstances. But when you have an extra layer of management, which the Bureau imposed, and they were really calling the shots, and they didn't have the expertise to call the shots. When you have to overcome that, your chance of success is minimized. But the sad thing about that is the IRA are looked upon as a failure. The IRA canneries especially are looked upon as failures. When the burden of failing should have been shared with the BIA, because they in fact were the managers. So, but the Southeast people have that experience, and so if you were to ask them now, would you like to use this as a vehicle, they probably wouldn't all jump with joy. But again, I think the statement made by Mr. Paul, that our people in the present day would not tolerate that kind of interference, and that probably is what it is interference. I think the business judgment made by the present leadership, they would not accept BIA judgment, which is all it was, one person's judgment over another, and the BIA being the one that was prevailing. I don't think the native community would tolerate that kind of oversight at the present day. I think that the makeup of individuals and their understanding of operations of entities differ a lot than it did when those operations were on the scene. I think one of the other ones that continues to operate at this time and has a very good record and has survived all of the bad years is the Methla Catholic Cannery. That's an IRA corporation, and it's operating as an IRA entity, and it continues to contribute to the welfare of that community. So you have only one out of five, but it shows that it can be a good vehicle. However, I don't think it's a vehicle that should be imposed on all of the corporations or all of the villages. I think a vehicle of this type should be an optional thing if we were looking for a solution. I think very definitely the corporation should look upon it, and if it ever came about that the statute would allow this, I think it would be a very good option, but it should remain an option. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Hope. Mr. Starr, I think since you're right next to Mr. Hope and the microphone's there, if you'd like to add anything at this time, please do.
Yes.
Aye.
Mr. Starr, I think since
Mr. Quarrel, it's our secret.
I'd like to add anything at this
but
time.
But this gentleman over there, ask a question. What is the individual English class before the white man's here? Under the Indian law. Under the Indian law. The Indian, individual Indian. Is classed very highly. If he wish his family.
The Indian individual Indian.
And what he works for.
Is classed very highly.
I'm talking about the law. There's a lawyer here and there's a judge over there. I'm talking about the Indian law. You ask that. Where is his family?
I'm talking
it's
about
a very highly respected
law.
What he worked for. And his belongings shouldn't be touched. Shouldn't anything that belonged to him.
What he worked
is his, isn't it? It should never be, nobody have a right to take anything away from him.
Anything that belonged to him.
And again, I ask, I'm just answering your question. I talked to this man from North Slope. 1915, when the Assistant Secretary of Interior came in here to talk about the Indian land. The Indians didn't want the reservation on account, I said that yesterday, that they used the whole amount of land all over, every tribe, and you got villages and people all over Alaska. They have to use a big land. And I agree with you that what land was given to the Indians under the Land Act is very small. I said that again yesterday. And those other two gentlemen that talked to a while back about the ships district. In outlying villages all over the entire of Alaska, there is nothing. And the white man brought in the food. It will have to be bought by cash, which without work.
And
you couldn't buy it if you have to have the money to buy it.
Which without work.
So under the Land Act, Nick Biggs know that I didn't have very much education, but I had a lot to say about that.
So under the Land Act,
and Senator Stevens,
Nick
Senator Rizal,
know that
they took that Land Act and wrote it down where they think I could understand it. In that Land Act, there was quite a lot about how the Indians lived, where they picked their berries, where they picked fish, and where they picked some else to eat.
In that Land Act, there was quite a lot about
and that
where they picked their berries
should be remembered at all times.
And where they picked some else
about any land again, that's a funny thing. I don't know how
and that
the Oklahoma Indians got their money from when they found oil in their land. Because under the Indian land, they said we don't own anything under the land. No minerals, no oil, no nothing. And I think that should go to the United Nations. And in human rights.
Under the land. No minerals. No oil. No nothing.
I think myself.
And I think that's a good.
Whether you're Indian, white man, or whatever you are, if you land.
Human rights.
If you got so many acres, maybe 100 acres or 40, 50 acres like that, they have. I think that's your land. Anything under it is yours.
Human land.
So what's a funny?
So many acres, maybe 100 acres or 40.
What do you lose? What the Indians? Indian land.
I think that's your land, and it's been under.
And I'm glad that the people with a little education.
So what's a funny?
When I first was a little boy, there was no schools.
Indian land.
And I'm glad that the Indians didn't have no names. When the missionaries came, you see the certain missionaries all over. They're the first one, and behind them is the army. The army always, it was a funny talk about army, you know. We was not the citizens of the United States in 1944.
Behind them is the army.
The army outside the States, you know. You find an old army sergeant with a stripe on there, and he'll see an Indian, and he'll tell you, what you do around here? Looks like you didn't have no business to. Be around there at all, you know. You're a soldier, you're a warrior with the government.
And you see an Indian, and he'll tell you.
And about the education, I'm telling you about the early days.
Be around there at all, you know.
The younger people today should have all the education they can get, but then, again,
education. I'm telling you about
the federal government and the state government say that they can't.
The younger people today should have all the education.
We can't train them for jobs or give them too much education. They haven't got the money to do these things, but they should try to give them all the education they can.
See that they can't.
I'm glad that you people came here talking, and the people behind all over would have something to say later on, maybe tomorrow. About the land claims, like Mr. Parker said yesterday, quite a lot of natives still get more than $100. But the people that ran the corporations and got paid for it, they made good living out of it.
About the land claims,
not all the corporations, not all of them are broke. I talked to Hoosley, I think, as well as a Pocaycook. And Sam, I forgot his first name, he's one of the leaders there. He told me, he said, well,
I talked to
we got
Hoosley, I think, as well as a Pocaycook.
For our village.
Sam, I forgot his first name.
All the money that we got. And we added little more to it.
We got.
So I would say to the people, to the natives,
our village,
that it's not all.
All the money that we got. We added little more to it. And we added
it's not all bad. That I believe that the future with some corporations, and when the Indian leaders like you,
it's not all.
I think that some good will still will come out of this.
But the way it
was written, I said again yesterday, I was in Washington. After all the work I did on it in the early days, I never went to Washington. And Mr. Wright said that the Indian leaders, the Indian chiefs, should have been there. Because in the early days in the United States, there was a chief, whether they could talk Indians or not. They're the first people that the United States government asked.
The Indian chief should have been there.
So,
in the early days in the United States,
I think tomorrow there are some people back here who's going to see something.
They're the first people.
And I think you'll give them a chance. So, thank you.
Maybe we could just take a 5-minute break. It's kind of warm in here under these lights, and then turn to Mr. Ewan and Mr. Tialana and Mr. Yupikson and then any others who wish to speak.
Maybe we could just take a 5-minute break. It's kind of warm in here under these lights, and then turn to Mr. Ewan. Then
Well, maybe we could take our seats again and begin again.
Yes. A certain number of given axioms, rules that our advisors impose upon us. Take the issue of sovereignty. The Goldberg firm of lawyers believed that there would be no possibility of persuading Senator Jackson to have in the bill any protection for the sovereignty of the Indian tribe.
Well, let's start again when we can assemble around the table.
We could not talk about. Fortunately, Johnny Cook,
let's start again when we can assemble around the table.
And they were angry. They could see the oil wells being dug. You know, it's almost a certainty of rape. And I can remember in the 1969 hearings, I threatened to bring a lawsuit to enjoin the September 1969 sale, that is, the hearings were after the sale, but we were going to tie up the money to sue the Bank of America. It was floating in the money so that the state couldn't spend the $900 million. And we issued a press release. You know, Peter A. Burley, one of the Goldberg lawyers, made fun of me. More than that, he ridiculed me.
Well, maybe we can start again.
That you are being counterproductive. You are hurting.
As soon as they.
Even such a saint as Howard Ross.
Well, maybe we can start again.
Well, maybe we can start again. Well, maybe Mr. Ewan, if you have anything to add, you might do so now. And
you saw? Oh, thank you. I'd just like to say, usually when you're near the end of the panel or discussing, you have very little to add. I'd like to point out one thing that I don't think was pointed out too much or alluded to during the discussions here was that I think the land claims bill made 12 regions, I think, arbitrarily. I don't know. I don't think the natives as a whole throughout the state had numbers in mind when they thought of a land claim. They didn't think, oh, we're going to have a land claim settlement. I don't think they really, truly knew from the time that we began the struggle for the land claims that this is the way the pie was going to be divided. And to this day, I have a feeling myself personally, we under time pressure I think, left out villages that should have been in our region, or maybe other regions maybe feel the same way. But under time pressure, we had to resolve the boundary issue really, really quick so that we can go on with business. I think I want to point that out. As far as IRA sovereignty is discussed for the last day or so, I don't think this was in back of too heavily on the leaders' minds, at least not on my mind at the time. Mainly because it was foreign to me at the time. Did the word sovereignty had heck, I don't know. I didn't even know what that meant when in reference to natives. How I couldn't visualize at the time in my mind how this land claims was going to work. I was that ignorant. Most of the board members were not included in talks, such as Don Wright and John Barbich and maybe Emil Nadi. A few of our leaders had to do a lot of negotiations that we, as a board, did not know all the intimate details about. I think that should be known for public record. We were not all represented at each and every negotiation or any meeting at Washington, especially because we couldn't bring the board to Washington a lot of times. The biggest problem I saw at that time was our lack of understanding of what land claims was all about. I'm talking about statewide. I used to work at a statewide level. I traveled around the state a lot, and the native people in the state, I don't think, grasped what the leaders were really pursuing. I mean, what vehicle they're going to use to implement the land claims, I think, was totally foreign to them. So I don't think sovereignty and cultural identity or whatever was really an issue at that time. I think Don Wright said it right when he said that we'll be natives regardless of whether we have land or not. But I think it bonds the native people. If you have land, I think you, as a group, I think it keeps you together. It keeps your group of people, Otna people, especially in my area, together. And you identify with your people better. I think that's about all the comments I have. Thank you.
Native people, if you have land, I think you.
I have been sitting here almost 2 days now. And there is several issues that come up concern about what the David Case said about how we are going to retain our cultural values. There's a lot of natives here, all of us, almost all of us are natives.
There's several issues.
We are responsible to retain our native culture. Before the white man come, our ancestors teach our cultural values. If we do it just like our ancestors, we're still going to maintain it. Teach our kids, teach our grandchildren. Just like our ancestor did.
Native culture.
If you don't know, ask the elders. That's how we are going to retain it. It's not going to cost us a penny or $1 million to retain it. It's except to us, the native people.
Just like our ancestors.
The values
we still going to maintain
that we inherit from our ancestors.
Teach our grandchildren. Just like our ancestors.
And the Baron Marat.
No, ask the elders.
Talk about, are we going to destroy what we work for so far today? Are we going to destroy ANSA? the native people.
Well, we work so hard,
the value,
try to get it,
that we inherit from our
I gave you some example yesterday about two hunters going out hunting for moose and seal. That's what we are today. Who's going to be a better shooter than the other hunter?
Are we going to destroy ants?
Those examples teach us, going to teach us a lot.
Try to get it.
We, Mr. Chief Isaacs at one time going in AFN convention,
hunting for moose.
The only way you're going to be succeed
what we are today
is hand by hand.
Who's going to be
you have to understand
the other hunter,
each other.
Those examples teach us.
One time I gave a talk to the board of directors not too long ago.
Chief Isaacs at one time in AFN.
I said, don't destroy
the only way you're going to be succeed
is your organization.
You have to understand.
Somebody dreamed your organization 20 years ago. So it could be benefits for you today. I also give an advice,
not too long ago,
just like my ancestor gave me advice.
I said, don't destroy.
Don't try to be smart aleck.
Somebody dreaming
when you have a meeting.
20 years ago.
Because there's somebody back in back of you a little bit smarter than you are. Sooner or later, it's going to come forward and explain what you are. And I give advice to the
don't try to be
a person that want to run for legislature.
When you have a meeting,
I said, don't advance yourself for the problem you don't know.
Smarter than you are.
Progress as you learn.
Gonna come forward.
Can you make a progress
and explain what you are?
We also hear about Mr. Paul about
the person that
or IRA power.
Don't advance yourself you don't know for the problem you don't know.
In my mind,
progress as you learn.
Since the mining company to come to Alaska,
we take
all the money
here about Mr. Paul,
from where they mining
about
and left that's their problem.
IRA.
We have been trying to figure out how we are going to fix
in my mind
that we don't know.
Since the
so in my mind, not too long ago,
take all the money.
The concerned citizens of the United States want to clean up the waste
and left their problem.
DCB, whatever, is dumped.
We have been trying to figure
to
out
wherever they dump their waste. I think we should ask the Congress of the United States for the money what the miners left behind. Because there in Malat said, we don't have money right now. Try to give you the funds for the problem that we have.
They dump their more leverage, waste. I think we should ask the Congress of the United States for the
sometimes I picture myself
the miners left behind.
When we
because
give us
there Manalat said
some we don't something
have
to work for
right now to try to give you the fund for the problem.
I try to travel to reach my goal to make better for myself.
Sometimes I
just like my an educated mind in English.
When we
before I reach that goal,
something to work for.
There's no more funds. How am I going to educate myself while I was way behind among the other people?
Make better for myself.
They also, just like my, our ancestors mind, tell us a lot of times,
in English,
mostly about our behavior.
Before
in
the
village level,
goal,
they say no more some of us are very hard
to
give
to educate myself,
some guidance. Because our body is so strong when we were young people.
Other people.
We could travel any place we want. We don't give no advice. We don't take advice from the old person. When that happens, the elders say the Mother Nature will teach that young man for us someday. It's true enough. In our island,
because
one of us in my lifetime drifted out from the King Island. That doesn't want to take no advice from the elders.
We don't give no advice.
What did he say from the after I had come back from a couple of days later?
The elders say the Mother Nature.
He said on first night I tried to sleep out in the ice. He said I should listen to my elders.
It's true enough. In our island,
sometimes when the elders cannot get through to us, they said the Mother Nature will teach for us.
That doesn't want to take no advice from the elders. What do you say from the after I have come back from?
Those are the things that I try to put in my notebook.
He said,
so
first night,
so I could try to give some answers, whether they're right or wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Sometimes when they said to Mother Nature,
it's been brought to my attention that in some of the material that went out about the overview, it was indicated that there would be an opportunity for the public to participate, and we've had some participation thus far. There's three people who've asked to speak, and I thought I might invite them to do so now, and then we'd carry on with Mr. Upikson and Mr. Borbridge, giving members of our panel, so to speak, the last word.
It's been brought to my attention that in some of the material that went out about the
Ms. Hashpeet, you wanted to clarify something you said yesterday.
The public to participate, and we've had some participation thus far. There's three people
who wanted to add to what you said yesterday,
and I thought I might invite them to do so now.
Ms. Upikson, and I think you wanted to say something,
giving members of panel, so to speak, the last word.
My name is Evelyn Hashpeet. Yesterday I said something about self-appointed leaders as opposed to traditional leaders, and I want to clarify that by illustrating what could have happened. If the traditional leaders rightfully represented their nations and thereby proved actual use and occupancy and dominion, ANSCA would have met the expectations of the majority of us indigenous people of the land. Instead, self-appointed people, orphans, displaced natives, unfortunate people who were not aware of their own tribe's use and occupancy, language, culture, and inherent sovereignty were used to address the immense value of the land, surface and subsurface, renewable and non-renewable, subsistence, religion, religious practices, ceremonial practices, technical and scientific knowledge,
use and occupancy,
and laws of the tribe,
and inherit sovereignty,
which is only available to those who speak or understand their language, their history, and our people,
renewable and non-renewable,
and who are raised for it.
Subsistence, religion.
I know the use of self-appointed leaders was orchestrated by the oil companies, United States government, State of Alaska, and others with much to gain from, as Fred Paul so beautifully stated, the whites call it expropriation. The Indians call it stealing. Stealing of our surface and subsurface, rights and inherent sovereign use of the 65-mile limit, high seas limit, hunting, whaling,
self-appointed leaders with
orchestrated and our water rights,
oil companies,
and I am still willing to fight,
Alaska,
if necessary, after the paper trails and the talk fails, my land, because Copper River and my indigenous people were never conquered by Russia, nor the United States.
I have the name of Vernita Zillis, so take that microphone there if you like, and Mr. Paul Frost.
Yes, I'd like to further add to what she had to say. It seems very strange that the entire destiny of Alaska has been decided without the consent of the native peoples in any recognizable democratic way. It didn't happen in the Statehood Act in 59, and it didn't happen in 71 at the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. I think that what we have here, the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, if we wish to, as the people, I can hear the panel members expressing the interest for the children and the continuation of the culture, and they mention self-determination, and we mention sovereignty. What we have in these corporate structures is placing our land in feudal tenure. We do not have that in America. We have the people of the United States gives the power to the government, not the government giving the power to the people.
The Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, if we wish to, as the people, I can hear the panel members expressing the interest for the children and the continuation of the culture, and they mention self-determination, and we mention sovereignty. What we have in these corporate structures is placing our land in feudal tenure. We do not have that in America. We have the people of the United States gives the power to the government, not the government giving the power to the people.